Hey, Mason, I really need a good gift for my generic loved one. Any ideas?
Oh, yeah, Andrew. I have the gift they need. If you sign up for GoDaddy's Economy Blogcast package, you'll receive 1 gig of disk space, 100 gigs bandwidth, recording tools, and much more.
Whoa, with all those features, I'd guess that kind of package will run me at least $20 a month and be plastered with ads.
You're wrong, Andrew. The Blogcast Economy package is just $4.49 a month for 12 months.
That's a deal, and a perfect way to get your own website, blog, or podcast started.
Ooh, yeah, that is a deal. Plus, enter code MUGGLE when you check out. Save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Because it's the final episode of the year that was Harry Potter, this is MuggleCast episode 126 for December 31st, 2007.
Well, boys, we did it. We made it through 2007 all in one piece.
So far.
It's the end of the year. It's December 30th or 31st. We're at the end of the year.
You can't judge those small amounts of time, Andrew. You know, anything can happen in a day, in half a day, in a minute, in an hour.
That's true. I think you've made that speech before.
Wait, Jamie. I'm glad that you're back. I'm so glad that you're back that I'm going to contradict you.
That's very nice.
Rome was not built in a day.
Rome was not built in a day, but that just goes to show how awesome Rome is. Whereas stuff that can be built in a day, you can still build a lot, but you can't build that.
Yeah, you're saying, though, anything can happen in a day, and I agree with you, telling Andrew that, except if we wanted to build Rome, we couldn't do that in the day that we had left in 2007. But anyway, great to have you
Jamie,
back.
Yeah, Jamie, I'm just happy you're back. Thank I'm not going to pick a fight with you.
You'd be sorry if you did. I can promise you that.
But see, I know better. That's the thing, dude.
Yeah.
That's the
Eric,
best point of the
you
day.
You need to wise up. You got to wise up.
Come on, man. I love you. It's great you're back. I'm so happy.
It's a good show to be back on because we are going to take a look back at the big events of this past year. It's been one of the best years in a while, I would say. Yeah. I would say it's the best year ever.
Since last year, at least.
Ever. What, Matt?
It's the best year since last year, at least.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I would go so far as to say ever. And also, we're going to place a call to WB to get results about my DVD because I'm very angry. So we have a full show today.
Them.
I mean, you bet, Jamie. I get results, man. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Jamie Lawrence.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
And I'm Matt Britton.
Micah Tannenbaum is in the MuggleCast News Center with the final news stories of 2007. Hey, Micah.
All right, thanks, Andrew. 2007 was by far the biggest year for Harry Potter fans that we've seen. It was filled with book releases, movie releases, theme park announcements, an open book tour, and much more. Check out MuggleNet.com for the 4th annual Year in Review, highlighting the biggest and most interesting stories of 2007. Cleaning up on the year-end awards, USA Today recently named J.K. Rowling's final novel in the Harry Potter series Book of the Year. A huge factor was due in part to the record-breaking numbers in sales made by Deathly Hallows. 11.5 million copies were sold within the first 10 days of the July release. The decision came down to something much deeper. Hallows is the Book of the Year because Rowling gave her story an ending that was as graceful, unpredictable, and satisfying as the series itself. She reaffirmed that magic can exist when someone opens a great book and enters a world created from words on paper. She made us believe that the imagination, like her own little wizard, now all grown up, still lives. And finally, the documentary J.K. Rowling, A Year in the Life, that aired yesterday on ITV in England, is now available on the station's website. The description reads, "With unprecedented access, cameras follow author J.K. Rowling in the year that she completes her publishing phenomenon, the Harry Potter series. The program captures her return to the sources of her inspiration, and she reveals what she is planning on writing next." That is all the news for this December 31st, 2007 edition of MuggleCast. Happy New Year. See you all in 2008. Back to the show.
All right. Thank you, Micah.
You're welcome.
We're not going to discuss any news this week because we're recording this a little earlier than normal. But Micah and Eric, I guess you guys wanted to get your input in on a couple of news stories from last week. First of all, there's casting announcements. I mean, basically on last week's show, we said that it wasn't really that big of a deal because we don't know any of these actors.
Yeah, but we do know by the casting. You're talking about the casting of Cormac McLaggen, Blaise Zabini, Romilda Vane, Katie Bell, Leanne, and Marcus Belby. I'm just glad they're in the movie in some shape or form.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, I was just curious. Is this the final release as far as characters are concerned, or are we going to be hearing more in the future?
No, I don't think so. I would wager that there's more to come still.
Oh, they haven't even casted Scrimgeour, have they?
No.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah.
Well, they may have, but we don't know about it. But it sounds like they've got the Slug Club.
Oh, so, wait a second. Wait, are we sure about that? No, they have cast them, haven't they?
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think Dark Horizons made that announcement, didn't they?
Hang on, IMDb.com.
Oh, wait, no, I'm getting that confused with Slughorn.
Yes, he's a very good actor, Jim Broadbent.
Super. Yeah.
Oh, is he? Have you seen him?
He's in an episode. In fact, funny talk, we should talk about it. I just saw an episode of Only Fools and Horses, which is a British sitcom from quite a while ago, that stars Jim Broadbent as a character, and it was very, very good. So he's Slughorn, very, very good.
Awesome.
But it's like, what was I going to say? Completely forgotten what I was going to say. Go on.
Okay.
Talk about yourself.
I'm not finding it on IMDb. I'm finding it for Scrimgeour.
All right. We cleared that up. My bad, Matt.
Yeah.
Sure. And what about the Gaunts? I mean, we haven't heard anything about them at all.
You know, I'm very worried about that.
It seems like something that could very well be cut, because
I don't know. That's pretty central to the story, though. The Gaunts is an important sort of, like, helping element that gets them into the whole Voldemort family backstory.
You know.
They haven't really cut anything that was central to the story yet in the movies anyway.
You're
right. But it just worries me because we're seeing all these clips from the school side of things that it's just... I mean, maybe they're just not revealing anything about Voldemort, but I can't wait to see the... not just the orphanage scene. We do have kind of confirmation they're doing the orphanage scene, which is amazing.
Definitely.
But,
do.
But just about, like, Dumbledore and Harry is what I'm more interested in. But the director had said that he was really going to focus on the relationships as a big part of the movie, and I'm worried that that will downplay any gauntness.
Yeah.
That's probably true. But it's just... I don't know. Perhaps it's just a personal thing. I just really, really like that storyline, the whole Gaunt storyline and the ring.
Same.
Well, I guess we'll see. I mean, I guess they probably haven't been cast yet because maybe filming for that scene won't occur until, say, mid-spring or even later, maybe late spring.
Maybe. That reminds me. When I thought of Merope Gaunt as a character, I thought Helena Bonham Carter should play her, but then they cast her as Bellatrix.
Very interesting.
Wouldn't she make a Merope Gaunt, like a good sort of...
You're thinking along the lines as well, along the same lines as that, and you could... I see a sparkling career ahead of you now. But I have a philosophical question for you all, though. If a Harry Potter cast member is cast, but nobody hears about it, has he really been cast? It's like the tree thing. It's like if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, does it cause a sound?
Yes, absolutely.
But has he, though? Because if the public who bring in the money haven't heard about it, what difference does it make if it's just being, you know?
Yeah.
I don't believe that. No, it's
it's a terrible question. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, if the paperwork has been filed, Jamie, and they know that they've been cast, and Joe Rowling...
You see, that's an important thing, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I thought casting was complete, though, wasn't it? I mean, they just maybe haven't made the announcements yet.
Well, maybe right. Maybe they need... What was I saying? Forget it.
Well, they probably want to spread the casting out to create more press, but right. let's keep moving on here. J.K. Rowling was named the second runner-up in Time's Person of the Year. What was your guys' reaction to this?
What do you think, Micah?
I just don't really get Vladimir Putin, I guess. I mean, I'm sorry, but
Who?
This whole thing goes back to being Time's Person of the Year. What did Vladimir Putin do this year that automatically qualifies him to receive this award? And I'm not saying that over the course of his career he hasn't done things and, you know, opening up Russia. But this one was a little bit odd for me, especially when you look at the first runner-up in Al Gore, who probably has done a little bit more, but this is a Harry Potter podcast. J.K. Rowling, her series came to an end. Everything that she's done, not just in literature, but in charity as well.
Yeah.
Seemed to me this would have been the perfect year to give it to her. And, I just look back over some of the people that have been named Time Person of the Year over the last couple of years, and it's kind of a joke.
yeah. Well, you were last year, so I wouldn't be complaining.
Yeah, that's a joke in and blessings. Of itself. But, I mean, 2001, Rudy Giuliani, to me, was really the only time in recent history that they actually got something right.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very opinionated, and I think anyone who wasn't a Harry Potter fan would look at that and say, J.K. Rowling got that? I mean, she wrote a book, but,
exactly.
It's not
a big deal. Honestly, I mean, even seven books is like, what? No.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, her impact is so much more far-reaching than just she wrote a book.
Yeah, it's true, and the thing with Russia, I mean, well, Time is more political, I think, and Al Gore has done obviously a lot with global warming. He'll have his time to come. I just think number three is a good feat for Joe. I mean, if the Harry Potter series is not going to get recognized with number one, I'm glad it's number three.
I agree.
Well, she's annually up, though. I mean, right?
Yeah.
She's been nominated for this many times before.
Yeah.
So, it's a victory. It's a victory.
Yeah. Let's move on now. Last week, I told everyone that, I was having problems with my DVD, and of course, a few people emailed in, and, of course, I'm very frustrated from this, and, you know, this is absolutely unacceptable. When I purchase a Harry Potter DVD, I expect nothing but pristine, crystal clear quality. So,
even though we're used to the crap features.
Well, you know, besides that. So, we're gonna call the thing now, WB, and I'm gonna get some results here.
So hopefully I can have this conference. But first of all, Andrew, have you determined whether or not you're the only one?
It's too late. I'm calling.
World?
Yeah, dude. Didn't you listen to me? I said that we've gotten emails from people saying that they were having the problem. Hi, I called earlier and I got disconnected. I'm having a problem with my Order of the Phoenix DVD. It's the quality is messed up in some places.
What is your name?
Andrew Sims.
S-I-M-S?
Yes, S-I-M-S.
S as in Sam?
Yes.
And your address?
Medford, New Jersey.
Okay, and a phone number for you?
609.
Okay, and what was the video you purchased?
Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. It was the two-disc special edition.
And a two-disc?
Yes.
One of the discs does not work.
Yeah, well, the quality on the first disc is pretty bad. It's grainy in the first half hour of it, and in the last half hour, it's also very grainy.
All right, well, we'll just forward this on to Warner.
Okay.
And they will take care of it. If they have any questions,
okay, great. Now, if they don't have questions, are they just going to mail me a new copy, or?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye. Wonderful. A free copy. I mean, I could just lie to them and get a free copy.
What a pleasant woman to deal with.
What?
What a pleasant woman to deal
with.
She
was very nice.
She sounded like she smoked 10 packs a day.
You know, no, honestly, Monsters, Inc., the boss in Monsters, Inc., the boss.
Yeah.
No, nice.
But my disaster,
you know what?
You still haven't filed your paperwork.
If you are having a similar problem like I did, or you're having any problem with your DVD, what you can do is you can call this number that I just called. The number is 1-866-488-4640, and it's that easy. They'll just forward you on. Please do not call them unless you really have a problem with your DVD, okay? Don't call them and be like, hey, you're on MuggleCast. Don't be stupid, please. We're all adults here. That number is for people who are having a problem with the Order of the Phoenix DVD. So,
and just make it clear to them that your disc play is fine. It's not a defective disc. It's if anything, it's the quality of the film. Because, Andrew, your film plays. It's just the first 30 minutes are grainy.
Right. Well, it's the first 15 and the last 30, but I said the first 30 to make it sound even worse. So.
Yeah, well, not definition. Anyway, she probably wrote it down. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when they give you the replacement disc in like 10 weeks.
I'm going to sell it on eBay.
No, don't sell it on eBay.
I'm just kidding. I'm going to use it.
Check it out. See if it has the same issue. And then...
Better not.
Jeez.
Well, let's move on now. This is our New Year's show, so we are going to do a year in review. We're going to cover the top 10 moments, happenings, things of the past year.
Woo!
This says it's in chronological order, but the theme park announcement didn't come before the movie 5 and book 7 announcement.
Well, the book 7 announcement was supposed to be when we found out that we were going to have the summer release of the summer to remember.
Okay.
So I did that in a conjunction thing.
All right. So one of the biggest announcements this summer was the idea of, well, was the announcement of a Harry Potter theme park in Universal Studios. Now, this had been rumored for a very long time, and rightly so, I guess, because the rumors came true, and I guess there was a lot of talk going around within Universal, even Disney, because Warner Brothers was in negotiations with Disney, but that didn't work out either. So, what do you guys... I mean, a year ago, I don't think we ever would have imagined this theme park. It really did seem surreal, didn't it?
Woo! It gives us something to look forward to, I think.
Yeah.
It seemed completely doable, but it just seemed like no one wanted to do it.
Right.
But given our updated information that they're doing holidays at Hogwarts, what do you guys think about that now?
I think it's... Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a nice way to sell the park and compete with Disney.
Yeah. I can't wait to ride the Quaffler. I think that's going to be awesome.
You think that exists?
I think that's going to exist. That's going to be their top ride, the Quaffler. Well, you name their top ride, Jamie.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't saying anything.
I know. I'm joking. I'm just.
It's going
to
be.
I'm trying to think of good ride names because. Yeah.
The Tri-Wizard Whizzer. There you go.
Honestly, I think it's going to be a ride on the Ford Angela. Anglia.
Angela.
Anglia.
How long has she been doing that job, Andrew? Is she just being
whatever. Anyway.
Ford Angela.
The Ford Anglia. It's going to be we'll be on the Ford Anglia. Just because I think, like, that's...
They treat her so badly there, Andrew. They just work. Poor Angela.
All right, we get it. I'm retarded.
Our hearts go out to Ford Angela. No, I had Roller Coaster Tycoon. You guys play that game. You had that, obviously, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I tried to make a Hogwarts Park one. So I have all these recycled ride names that I've been trying to sneak into the show ever since we first heard about our theme park, and the Quaffler was one of them. So,
okay. Yeah. Well,
very
who knows?
Very funny.
That's clever.
Yeah.
But I would definitely say it was all in our wildest dreams, but now it looks like it's come true. And this is one of those things... When people come up to you and ask, oh, come on, Harry Potter's dead, there's nothing coming anymore. You could be like, well, you got two movies, you got a theme park, and then they go, wow, theme park, sorry, my bad.
It's not like House MD would have its own theme park, honestly.
Yeah.
The OC.
Yeah. This is going to be the first book that has its own theme park.
Is it? No, it's not. Surely.
No,
surely
well,
not.
I'm just grabbing at straws.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
Well, pretty much every ride in Disneyland's based off a book anyway.
That's true.
No, it's based off a movie.
Okay, Andrew.
And
no, seriously.
And all the Zelda Disney movies weren't books.
You
first.
Feel strongly about like that, don't you?
Well, no, I mean, If you like, I mean, there's no Lord of the Rings theme park or
no, but it's different. It's like the permanence of Harry Potter. They've seen it, and it's a different. And it's kind of a different generation because we read it and then our children read it, but then older people read it as well. I know it's kind of the same with Lord of the Rings, but not to the same extent.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
You know.
I guess that's true because Harry Potter is a movie anyway now, so. And heck, all the designs are coming from the movie itself. I mean, they have Stuart Craig working very closely with them, helping them design all the areas, so.
So I think it'll be good. What I don't want for it to be is a couple of shops that are constantly there all year round. Like
it better
that idea. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because like holidays at Hogwarts, they can always have like the pumpkins flying and the do you think they'll try and attempt hovering candles and stuff like that? Like for the Great Hall, because that would be awesome.
That would be cool. I don't know though. It better be good though. That's all I know. I mean, the expectations are so. I think are so high on this theme park now. There's no way this thing can be small. There's no way this can be lacking in any sort of way, shape, or form.
No.
I mean, I think you know us. We're going to be very critical of it.
Part of it now is that
Warner
Brothers, I think, what they weren't able to cover in the movies, they have to make up for in this theme park because
the fan is
going to be much more critical of the theme park than they are of the movie. I mean, we're already very critical of the movies, but you're looking at a theme park and they have the ability to include so much more in this.
Oh,
every little detail.
But is it even going to be that big?
Well, that's the other thing. It's not, I mean, it's a theme park, but it's a world in a theme park. It's not, you know, it's no Disney World.
Well, I think it should be bigger then. Even without seeing it, it should just be bigger.
It should be bigger, but I mean, you know, like, they want to get this done soon too.
How many coasters are they going to have? Like
just one, I think. There's not going to be that many rides.
No. So that's a bit depressing.
They can always expand later. I mean,
yeah,
it's not like the first time they do it, it's going to be set in stone. That's what it's going to look like.
Right.
Yeah. Set in Sorcerer's Stone for that.
Yeah.
What do you guys think is going to be the... speaking of what Micah's saying about the books and being able to use, like, obviously they're trying to cram things into two-hour movies and that's why stuff's not in the movies. What do you guys think will be... This is just my own wondering. For the stuffed toys for the Swerkin games, what do you think they'll be given out for that?
For the
Surely
what,
not
sorry?
More Hedwigs.
You know
the Swerkin games, and the prizes you win, like
no,
the little...
They are
little
Hedwigs,
dollar.
But it... It also comes with like a defibrillator that you can stick on your chest.
That would be good.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Some children's lives ruined, and some not. It just depends. You know?
Yeah.
Luck of the draw.
I'm really excited to see what kind of candy they make in Honeydukes in that store.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. Well, they've already got a line of candy, the Birdie Bots.
Yeah, but I mean, like, for a full store, I mean...
Oh, yeah.
I seriously doubt that it's just going to be regular candy.
Yeah.
That's true.
I'm a little concerned it's going to be commercialized a bit.
Yeah, it will.
But I'm just thinking of, like, walking through the gift shop, and it's going to be all the Harry Potter toys we've seen a million times before.
It should be totally new.
That would just
totally
be
new.
Well, it should be, but, I mean... Their reasoning might be, well, we're creating a new theme park. We don't have to come up with new toys.
Well, who knows? I mean, by that time, all the movies will be out. Or the last one will be awaiting release.
Yeah. Mm. Can you imagine walking in there and all the books are for sale and all the complete book sets,
By the time they get through all of the... Yeah, I mean, that's enough stuff right there, just the books and a shop.
I think that they'll try and keep certain shops authentic, but... You know, like Andrew, I still think they're going to have shops where they'll have stuff with, you know, similar to what you just said, where you have books and stuff that we've seen a million times already.
So, do you think it'll just be like a big vendor room for all of the?
Basically.
Yeah, I'm worried about that too.
I mean, that'll be a great place for us to hand out MuggleNet stickers.
You know, I only have like 7 left. I handed out all of the other ones I had, and I got like 100 from Emerson. I was like, dude, I need to give this, like, give this huge wad of. And I was like, wow. So I'm down to a few.
Do you know how we should advertise the site? We should, if there's ever nuclear war, we just put a load of stickers inside the bomb. And if they don't get vaporized, they'll go everywhere on Earth, and everyone will turn into a fat.
That's if they don't get vaporized.
That's a wonderful idea. That's a brilliant idea. Let's build a bomb, and we'll make sure to put...
Should we do that?
MuggleNet. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good thing to say on a podcast.
Oh, was that bad?
Set a nuclear bomb in the world.
Well, you know, we're a happy
podcast. So that our stickers go everywhere. And then anyone alive, anyone who isn't vaporized, will see our stickers that haven't been vaporized, and they'll know to go to MangaNet.com.
Yeah.
It's all right, though.
It can be.
I mean, we bomb other countries for no reason all the time.
A new version of I Am Legend, too.
I love that movie. Have you seen it, Jamie?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Oh, man. It's so good.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, before I forget, I've been meaning to make this announcement, or make this call out on the show. If there's anyone in the Orlando area who has a season pass or whatever to Universal, MuggleNet could really use a sort of reporter to go to Universal every few weeks and hit up a couple of the rides in that area where they're building the Harry Potter theme park and take some pictures of the construction. Because there's... No, I'm dead serious. Okay. Wait. Let me finish. Right. JimHillMedia.com has a correspondent who goes on the rides, and he gets on this Ferris wheel, and he goes up and takes pictures of the construction. Now, we could just as easily get a fan down in Orlando to do it. So if you have that capability, email andrew@sap.mungonet.com and we'll work something out with you. I mean, that'd be cool for us to become a nice little source for updates on the theme park.
If I were the theme park guy, I would cut the Ferris wheel down just to stop people doing that. But oh, by the way, by volunteering, we are not like if somebody comes after you and your camera.
Dude,
and,
nobody cares if you're taking pictures of the. That's not illegal or anything. You're just taking pictures.
Fine. Yeah, just a fan.
Yeah, well, that's. I mean, you're taking pictures of construction. Screw you.
Well, some of that stuff is like it's very serious. So
I guess. That's true.
Anyway, so we're just on number one of our top 10 things.
Yeah, we got to keep moving
the
here.
Year of review.
Oh, are we really?
The next big announcement that came early on in 2007 was the Book 7 release date, which was July 21st, 2007. This surprised most of us because even before we got this release date, we were speculating that, wait a second, oh, there's no way it can be released 2007. We spent shows just going back and forth trying to figure this out.
And then when we found out, we spent shows saying it was a bad idea. What do you guys think now? Did the movie coming out so close to the book really detract anything? Would you have preferred otherwise afterwards?
Well,
looking back.
It's hard to say, really.
You think?
Well,
in hindsight, I really... Sorry, Jamie.
No, go on. I can't remember what I was going to say, really.
In hindsight, I really don't think it turned out bad at all. I mean, it worked out great. Worked out great for the fan sites, especially. You know, we made these tour podcasts,
weeks,
the Wizard Rock tours. There was tons of them. And then the Harry Potter convention prophecy wrapped everything up. Overall, I think it wasn't as bad as we thought. I don't even know what we were so worried about. I think it was just that it would be too busy and it might affect sales or the hype of the movie and book.
Yeah.
Sort of clashing them together we thought could be a bad idea. But really, it went by so fast and nothing went wrong. Not that we thought something would go wrong, but...
Right. It's just a really big chain of reaction, I think. I mean, my first... that whole Summer to Remember started with me with the Book 7 event in London. So, with you guys. So, I was at the end of it, basically. I hadn't been living in the States, sort of, to experience the whole build-up of the movie and everything being released, so I imagine that was pretty cool.
Yeah. At this point, I couldn't imagine the book coming out in 2008.
Yeah, I know. It would have been so different.
Yeah.
Well, do you think it would have been less rushed? Did you feel that it was rushed?
No, not at all.
Okay, cool.
No.
Then that's a dumb question to ask. Okay, cool.
But I think it had to be done so that the book came out after the movie, not the other way around, because I think... The book would have done more damage to the movie if it had come out before.
I definitely agree with that.
I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. And the thing was, we had heard a while ago, before that announcement was made, Joe would have made the July 7th, 2007 release date. However, that fell too closely around the London bombings. Jamie, that was July 7th?
That was July 7th, yeah.
Yeah. So it would have been a bad idea. And in that case, then the book would have come out before the movie. So it would have been interesting to see what would have happened.
It would have been very interesting to see how different it would be. Like, would the hype have still gone from 1 to 10, with 10 being a lot, So like,
yeah.
Or would it have been huge hype and then down a bit for the movie?
Yeah, I think the premieres would have been directly affected too, because those premieres were in late June and early July,
And that would have fallen right around the book release. That would have been extremely busy.
Would have been
busy.
A big scheduling conflict, really.
Yeah.
Forgetting everybody everywhere across the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Perhaps in a parallel universe, there is a world where sort of that happened, and we have other MuggleCasters debating what would have happened if the movie came out first on the podcast.
Perhaps, yeah.
Well, the movie did come out first.
Sorry, did I say the book? Yeah, no, I'm saying in that world, they're debating what would have happened if the movie came out first, because for them, the book came out first.
Oh, okay.
See, philosophy was my major.
I gotcha, so, I gotcha. Forgive me.
And in relation to the Book 7 release, since we're on the topic, we did our live podcast at Waterstones. Jamie, Eric, and I were there, along with Laura and Kevin, and that was by far our largest and most publicized podcast ever, because
I think it was highly successful.
I thought it was fun, yeah.
It was a very fun show.
Waterstones did so much for us.
And yeah.
They really did. Oh, my gosh. It was amazing. And Jamie, I know you were very, very highly upset afterwards. We were all crying, I think.
Oh, yes. It was very, very sad.
It was so emotional.
It was.
Yes.
It was.
Yeah.
I was bawling. People were bawling. Everyone was bawling.
It was great.
Now, Jamie, this is just and Andrew, you can cut this out, but question, had they recorded that video that they were broadcasting?
Oh, yeah, we never got a copy of that.
Shall I email them?
Did we ask for it?
Yeah, could you email them and ask?
Please do, because I personally, like, even if we don't ever do anything with it, I would love it, because that was cool.
Yeah, that would definitely be very cool.
That's so nostalgic for me and personal, and it's like...
Not to brag for Jamie and I, but I think we pulled that off very well. Remember, Jamie, it was like... We met with them like 3 weeks before.
That wasn't bad, yeah.
They bought us coffee or whatever, and we sat down. We're like,
there was like an array of drinks there. It wasn't even just coffee. It was like, what do you want? Oh, a coffee, please. And there was like a teapot got brought out.
I just wanted
tea,
water.
That's cool. Yeah. And then it was like coffee, and then water, and then the bill must have been like over a grand. Yes.
Just for a meeting.
So you retreated to this array of foods for your meeting with Waterstones then.
Yeah, and then at the actual podcast itself, we each got one little plastic cup of water. So
yeah, but
with
we got
no
introduced
refills.
By Rubius Hagrid, so I don't really think money can replace that.
That was cool.
That was,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all right, yeah. So that was great, and then. Let's see. What do we want to jump to here?
We missed one of the things was Pickle Pack. We came out with that in about, was it April, May? You came up with that idea, Andrew, and you said.
Well, when did we start? We started selling in April, I think. We opened up for registrations in April.
Said, hey guys, we're going to do a members only thing called Pickle Pack because we're really obsessed with pickles, and we're going to do video blogs every week.
I hate pickles.
They're not bad.
Me too.
They don't.
Honestly, so Pickle Pack will be good. And now, just to clear it up, Andrew, I don't know if you did this on the Christmas show, but people were wondering what's going to happen to Pickle Pack once episode 140 hits.
It's closing.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
No. I think
that's like 2 weeks away from the deadline anyway.
Yeah.
So
we
can probably still do two more video blogs.
Yeah. We will. We will.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yep.
And then what else, guys? Just quickly, the book tour. That Ben and Emerson did for MuggleNet's book. We can't leave that out, obviously, because that was a big deal. They went to all sorts of... How many places did they stop at? Do you know? Ben's
it was,
not
it was a lot, yeah.
A kajillion.
Literally.
So, at least a kajillion Barnes & Noble. A few borders as well.
Well, and then also coinciding with that is the MuggleCast Road Tour that we did over the summer.
From California to PA?
Yeah. I have to say that was... Probably one of the best experiences of my life.
I agree. It was so, so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, because Jamie did it as well. That's right. You were in the States, Jamie, more than you were in at home this whole...
that's got to be true.
Weren't you? Yeah.
From that first day.
In the summer.
And on the first day...
Are you a citizen
from
yet?
From the first day to the last day. I'm trying.
You've been in enough states, they should at least give you something. You know?
Well... One of them asked me last time, wow, you've been coming here a lot. You here for business? And I was like, I don't think I could pull off the yes. It's a Harry Potter corporation based in Toledo. And
I've told them I was going for business once. I think it was
really
from
awesome.
London. I was like, yeah, I just did a business trip for 4 days. And they were like,
that was nice.
But see, I still don't grow a beard or anything, so they still think I'm like 15 when they look at me. So I'm like, no, going on business, yeah, you know, and yeah, I still get carded everywhere I go. But now I am too young. Now I am too young to drink now that I'm back in the States. So
yeah, I think the highlight of my summer was when, actually no, of 2007 was when Jamie, Sam, and I went to Equus and they got carded, but I didn't.
The thing is with that is you know why that was. So
no, I think I look 21 or 18.
No, it's not. It's because you. It's because you're in shape for a couple of days, and because after they asked me, wait, they asked me first, didn't they? They asked me first. So after they carded me, they just assumed that since you were with me, they wouldn't need to guide you. You know,
I just know that bugs you, Jamie. So that's why I bring it up.
It doesn't bug me. I just don't mind arguing about it. That's all, Andrew.
Well, the funny thing was, I wasn't 18 when we went to Equus.
Naughty boy.
Wait, did you need to be 18?
To drink.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have said that. Okay, moving on. Yeah. We'll leave it at that.
So once Book 7 came out, the next thing we've got is obviously Joe's open book tour that she did for the children. And...
Actually, wait. Let's talk about episode 101 first, quick.
Oh, yeah, so right after book one...
Right
after book seven came out, guys, remember we did that lovely live feed of us laying on the couches and the beds and...
Yes.
And did we hit 1,000 people watching us?
Yeah, there was over 1,000 people watching us read on Ustream.
And
it was amazing.
Ironically, do you remember, it went up after we left and went to eat.
Right, yeah. They're more fascinated by the "be back soon" sign than anything else. But the thing about that show, we recorded right after we read the book. It was in that little hotel room in, what was that, the Holiday Inn? No, that was...
Which one?
Yeah, that was the Holiday Inn.
It was Jamie's brainchild, wasn't it?
It wasn't the St. Giles.
No, I have it in my phone. I have the name of it. I'll find it in a minute.
It's the Holiday Inn. It's the Holiday Inn. I'm sure of it.
Mayfair. Yeah.
Mayfair. Right. We recorded it in a little room there. We were all jammed in that one room. We didn't get two rooms for some reason. And
it was like a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, we couldn't get the...
I was shocked. I thought they were going to make us get two rooms. Remember that? Like, I didn't check in, and I thought I screwed it up with the baggage people.
So we've admitted to... underage drinking, cheating hotels. What's going to be next?
In this little room, we recorded this episode, which happened to be the most downloaded show of all time for MuggleCast. And it's got to be up there, one of the most downloaded podcasts of all time. 163,000 unique downloads to date of this one episode where we just sit there for less than an hour and talk about our initial reactions to the book.
Wow, and Jamie brilliantly handled emails in that. Wasn't it you, Jamie, doing that?
Yeah, Jamie was going through
Absolutely.
The emails.
You got every single one of those that came in and you read them.
Well, no, I didn't get every one, Eric. I got like
There was like 30 coming
percent.
In a second.
Yeah,
I just remember things would pop up and you'd handle them really well.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very nice of you. Yeah.
I'm really proud of that episode. I mean, just because we were so good for getting it, for just sitting down and getting it done, as soon as we finished the book, you know, we could have just suckered out and waited like a week to discuss our reactions, but we just did it, got it done. And because of how fast we got it up that day, I think it was the 22nd, because of how fast we got it up, there was just a surge of downloads for people looking for more information, you know, to hear our thoughts on the book. So
that's pretty
cool. Really proud of that episode.
Yeah. So now 2007 was a big year for Wizard Rock, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, because I really think it did surge this year because of the book. Everyone sort of began discovering Wizard Rock and what it had to offer. And that's just Harry Potter music. I mean, it turns out that's what all the Harry Potter fans love to hear, amazingly. So,
Though some don't. Mike admitted it was 2 weeks ago that he doesn't listen to it, and I don't really either.
Yeah, well, it's okay, Micah. But... there's some good artists.
Well, MTV recognized it, so hey.
That did happen this year.
It has gotten a lot of press. It also got press from MTV back in May too. So, you know, it's definitely worth noting. They've grown. The Wizard Rock bands have grown a lot. There's well over 100 Wizard Rock bands now.
Jeez.
It's just insane.
And are they all noun and the plural nouns? Is that
exactly. They're all Harry and the Potters. you know, Moaning in the Myrtles, Enter in the Simses.
Yeah, Enter in the Simses.
I'm just kidding. I hope that doesn't
exist. Did you sign a release for their band?
No, I would be embarrassed.
Cease and desist.
Cease and desist, yeah. So, besides that, another big event in 2007 was J.K. Rowling's Open Book Tour in the United States and Canada, and it was really just a chance for Jo to meet her fans like she used to, in a very informal setting, in a very intimate setting, where she could just read to them. And then, just amazingly, she met every single person in attendance at these events and signed a book for every single person. Just a fantastic thing for Jo to do. And, of course, it's also gained a lot of credibility for another one of the biggest events of 2007, amazingly, was the revelation of Dumbledore being gay. And our response to this episode, or to this announcement, was also one of the most, it was highly downloaded, but it was one of the listener favorites, just because we were so quick with it, and it was a fun show, it was also a serious show, and a lot of people could relate to the show. So
it was 117, Andrew?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, in hindsight, you know, when I heard this news, I was on a natural high. I was like, wow, Dumbledore's gay. This is amazing news. Something to stir up the fandom. I never thought something would stir up the fandom as much as that did after the book came out.
And you know what? The only thing I think that is more important than Dumbledore being gay, that the American, like, everybody was saying, it's everywhere in the news. We had listener accounts that it was every radio station in the taxis while people were dying halfway across the world. I think the only thing that has topped that in recent years has been just yesterday, Britney Spears' sister is pregnant, and she's 16. Because you guys realize that was on every channel. Even ESPN had this little ticker at the bottom that said, you know, Jamie Lynn Spears is pregnant. So I think that's going to be the next big thing.
Yeah. Well, Jamie, I had wanted to ask you about this because a lot of the feedback we had gotten said that this was not even an issue in England and most parts of Europe, whereas it's such a huge deal here in the U.S.
Well, I think it's, I mean, for some people it is a big deal for different reasons, you know. I mean,
yeah,
I can't talk for everyone, but for some people it's because, you know, it's a character they've grown up with and it's just a big change. For other people, you know, there could be other reasons, but I think it's the same as over there. It's just not as well publicized. It hasn't got around as well. I haven't heard that many people say it, and normally I think people would be talking about it, you know, and they're not. So I don't think it's as big as it is over there, or as widely announced.
Right.
Even nearly.
What are your thoughts on that, Jamie? I mean, we never really had you on the show after that announcement.
I think it's cool. I think it's very, very cool. I thought she was going to reveal. Well, I didn't think she was going to, but I'd have liked to have seen her at some point. She did talk about revealing a gay character or something. She talked about someone's sexuality, I'm sure she did. Or there's been a lot of talk for a while on who it could be. There was the whole what's it called? I guess it was going to happen at some point, but I wouldn't have thought that before.
No. Somebody had approached her about Remus and Sirius, hadn't
they? Remus and Sirius. Yeah.
And Jamie, you wanted to do an episode on that, I remember, but we were sort of like,
you
remember
that as a discussion.
Yeah, you wanted to do that as a discussion to analyze, to figure out, you know, maybe if they were both.
And just for the record, I think it's credible. I've said that before. I think it's credible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but we were afraid of going there just because of, you know, what the
And
whole...
before 117, it might not have been, you know, I mean, now we can talk.
We could definitely, so that was definitely one of the big things. Mm. What else have I missed here before we get
the last
to...
one
is that
is...
the only thing left?
Well,
I guess
I
so.
Maybe.
Yeah. Good, Eric.
Oh, and the last thing is the Tales of Beedle the Bard, which J.K. has handwritten 7 copies. I'm still not sure. Did she actually handwrite the story 7 times?
Yeah.
There's 7 copies of it, so yeah. So she handwrote the same story 7 times for each of these copies. And actually, what I think is cool of it, my friend Haya Coppersmith just sent me the auction booklet from Sotheby's of Beedle the Bard.
Oh, that's cool.
And it has this whole, it's absolutely wonderful. I love Haya for that. That's so amazing. But she sent me this auction book, and it has this detailed description. And apparently, the 7 copies of Beedle the Bard, if you guys didn't know this, were actually, she gave them, J.K. Rowling gave the other 6 to her closest, the people who had
yeah, dude, where have you been? That was the whole point of these.
Yeah. So she gave the other six to the most important sort of Harry Potter forerunners, like her publisher and stuff. And then the seventh book was the one that was auctioned off. I just wanted to make sure everyone knew that because I didn't.
Yeah, that was.
But I got a cool auction book, and it has the whole thing.
It's a shame. We actually, I got it a few weeks ago, and I talked about it on the show, but I guess you weren't on that episode.
No, I missed that.
It is cool. It's a nice little collector's item.
Yeah, so Amazon.com bought it for $4 million.
Yeah.
Or $3.98 million.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
Yep. Whole lot of money. And, we've discussed this on the past few episodes, but I think that will definitely set the... Well, I don't know. It's got to have an impact somehow. I just don't know how.
Well, it depends on what they do with it. They're going to do something with it.
They're going to take it on tour.
Yeah. But it'll still just be interesting in 2008 to see what they do, with the tour as far as specific.
Absolutely.
And are they going to have it in a glass case or
not? Oh, yeah. They're not going to let anyone touch that.
I mean, yeah. But they've just finished all their reviews on Amazon of all the stories. So that's interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
So the question now is, what's in store for 2008?
Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton?
Yeah,
that's the question that's on everyone's mind.
Good question.
What do you think, Matt?
We won't discuss that. Moving on.
For our president?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about that. We can't talk politics on the show.
Oh, okay, fine. Jeez, right. I just asked.
Ask a question. A legitimate answer.
No. Seriously?
Oh, I'm just saying, you said what's on the store for 2008. I think that's in my mind.
Well,
but
yeah,
you mean Harry Potter-wise?
Yeah, of course.
The sixth movie is coming out.
Yes.
A couple conventions.
Yeah,
we're going to have Terminus and
Portis, which will be at hp2008.org. Sign up today.
Absolutely.
And I think we're going to be getting plenty of theme park updates because over the next year, they're really going to start. This is going to be the year of building everything. So, I think we're going to be getting plenty updates about that. But generally, a lot quieter than last year, which I don't know if that's a good or bad thing.
Well, you're not going to match the hype of 2007. No year from this point.
Yeah, there's no way to
It would be foolish
compare.
To attempt to, really.
Yeah.
But it'll still be very exciting. It's the next big thing. It's like the Harry Potter fans are all, okay, what do we do next? Well, we get excited about the movie. Well, we get excited about the thing in this convention, and yeah.
All right.
Harry Potter's going to live strong through these events.
You don't even know what J.K. Rowling may announce next about a certain character or a plot point or something.
right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think we'll hear more about, maybe not more about the encyclopedia, but maybe more updates from Jo on her website. So,
well, there was a news post on MuggleNet just today, wasn't it? When she made Times Person of the Year, she said the eighth Harry Potter book.
Yeah, we talked about that last episode.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So I think that's a good look back at the past year that has been.
Great. That was our main discussion.
It's been a gigantic year.
Yeah.
One other thing I thought we could do favorites, the favorite segment, which we haven't done in a while. I thought we could just go around the table and talk about, we don't have to go into too much detail, but just list our favorite memories of 2007. Who wants to go first? Our favorite memory, 2007.
I'll go first. I think my favorite memory is the Book 7 event in Waterstones, just because of how it went off without a hitch. How Waterstones had prepared so much for us, how it was smooth once we got there, and getting the book, being in the VIP party, and actually most of all, seeing the fans that had been lining up, and I spent a bit of time down with them, as well as doing the podcast, which I think is still one of my favorite live shows, if not my favorite live show. I think it was just everything from the light above me almost falling on me was absolutely wonderful. And that's my favorite memory, absolutely, just that night.
Micah?
I mean, I would say because I had other commitments, work-related stuff, and wasn't able to go to London and a couple of other places, Philadelphia for me, because it was the first opportunity I had to do a live show, and it's really the only time, I think, over the course of the summer that I got to spend with, you know, you and Ben and Emerson and Jamie.
This was enlightening, Micah.
Enlightening, yeah, Enlightening 2007. And I'll say this, you know, I haven't had the chance really to be at a whole lot of other conventions, but I thought that overall they had a lot of stuff, and they did a really good job for a family event.
Definitely, yeah.
And the place we podcasted from was awesome. I don't remember the name of the hall that we were in, but it was Hogwarts-like almost.
Yeah, yeah, me neither. I would have to agree, before we get to Matt, I think enlightening. The podcast we did there was definitely, I think, the best live show we've ever done.
Really?
Yeah, because, I mean, the one in London was great, but this one in Enlightening, it flowed so well. We went for nearly 2 hours, and we didn't want to stop. Wow. I remember whispering over to Ben, when should we wrap it up? And he was like, let's just keep going with questions. This is going really well. I was like, yeah, it is. And it sounds, if you listen to recording, it was a very professional audio recording, and it was in a hall, so you can sort of hear our voices echoing, so you can even get the feel of where we were. Overall, it was just definitely cool. A very nice cool experience. We had a great number of fans there, and like Micah said, the venue was excellent, and we went for nearly 2 hours. We were sort of the pinnacle of the conference. I mean, that's the way they made it out to be. I mean, we had a great time, but so did everyone there, and the organizers really enjoyed having us there.
Well,
so
that's
sorry
I missed it.
that was definitely worth it. It's a shame too, Eric, since you're right there.
Since it was in Pennsylvania, and I normally live in Pennsylvania, but yeah, that's okay. Yeah, sounds awesome.
Yeah. All right.
Matt.
Yeah, Matt.
Yeah.
Favorite of 2007?
I would have to say it would probably be Prophecy in Canada. It would probably be my favorite because, looking back, nothing went wrong. Pretty much everything was pretty much fun. And I think everybody enjoyed themselves a lot, and I had a lot of fun just meeting everybody, a lot for the first time, and it was just really fun.
You're going to Portis as well?
I don't know.
Oh, you should, man. Same people. HBEF.
Well, sort of.
We'll be there. Oh yeah.
Same people running it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think. And the one thing that didn't go right at Prophecy was that fire alarm that went off at like midnight or something.
Yeah, but I think everyone had a fun story to tell though during it.
And
Alex, I mean, I didn't have to go down like 30 flights of stairs, but
right.
Some people
who started
did
the fire alarm.
Nobody knows, but Alex Carpenter, I remember, started this dance that the fire alarm sounded like. Like something you would hear in like a techno song or something. So every time it started buzzing again, Alex Carpenter would start dancing like to a techno dance. It was so funny. It was so funny. I'm sure there's video on YouTube or something, but that was it's a good memory.
Yeah.
And so the Remus Lupin now has other band members, doesn't it?
Remus Lupins.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Remus Lupins. Awesome. Yeah,
great.
Awesome.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic live band.
Yeah.
And a great group of guys too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. Huh.
Jamie, what was your favorite moment of 2007? Whoa.
Maybe he's enjoying it right now.
That was him? I thought that was someone on Matt's mic.
It was my sister. Sorry. What?
Oh, well now.
Jamie, you there?
Okay. It's a tough choice. It really is a tough choice. I can think of so many good things. I mean, the book tour, I thought, was one of the best times ever. It was 8 days, was it? 8 or 9?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so much fun. But then Prophecy was so much fun as well, so it's such a tough one. It really is a tough one. But the entire summer was whirlwind. It was so cool meeting everyone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a really good summer, if that can be the thing.
Yeah. Jamie, you were away for a second when I was talking about mine. I don't know if you would agree with this. The Enlightening 2007 podcast we did, I would say, is definitely one of our best live podcasts.
That was a lot of fun, yeah.
Yeah.
That really was a lot of fun. It was a really... responsive audience as well.
Yeah,
really nice people.
That was like
got some good topics.
We podcasted for like over an hour and a half, and we didn't want to stop because it was just going so well.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a lot of fun. Enlightening altogether was fun. I thought the talk we
definitely
did, I enjoyed as well.
Yep.
About podcasting.
Yeah,
it was like
Well, let's move along now.
We've got two entire chapters.
Two entire chapters. Jeez. Let's move through them quick. Yeah. All right. So now it's time for chapter by chapter. We're going to start off this week with chapter 7, The Will of Albus Dumbledore. Mike, okay. you want to start with a basic summary and then go into the first point. Okay. I'll be right back.
Okay. So I mean, the basic summary of this chapter is just it's Harry's birthday. They're celebrating it, and the Minister of Magic makes an unexpected appearance at his party, and he goes over the contents of the will of Professor Dumbledore with Harry, Ron, and Hermione, and we'll get to that in particular in terms of what was left to the three of them. But what I wanted to start with is where the chapter begins, primarily Harry's dream that he's having, and He can't remember where he's heard this name. Well, first of all, he wakes up, and Ron tells him that he's been muttering some name in his sleep. And the name is, I believe, Gregorovitch.
Yep.
He has no idea who it is, but he knows that he's heard the name before, and he knows that it has to do with Quidditch. And he also knows that Voldemort is after him. Now, in my recollection, this is the first time in Deathly Hallows that we see Harry going into Voldemort's mind and experiencing things that Voldemort is experiencing. Was this really, in your guys' opinion, I mean, a safe idea? I mean, I know he is dreaming, but shouldn't he be trying to block these things out of his mind?
Okay, Hermione. Okay, honestly. Okay, Hermione. No, because... But wait a minute, just from what you said, Micah, is this the first time he's in his mind? Because isn't the first whole chapter kind of a nightmare of Harry's at the same time? Like, isn't that... Because Harry wakes up. Oh, no, never mind. He was already... No, he was awake and he was bleeding. Never mind, I'm sorry. I thought the first chapter was kind of a dream sequence, like... But that's in book four, isn't it?
Yeah.
The beginning of book four is Harry's dream. So, yeah, it is a strange connection between Harry and Voldemort, and you're right. During the chapter, when Hermione finds out about the dream, she scolds him that he should be keeping Voldemort out of his mind. And I think you're right. I think it's pretty dangerous. And there's a great line somewhere in this chapter that says, Voldemort's been taking over the ministry and the whole world, and you should, you know, not your mind, too.
But surely you can't know too much about your enemy. I mean, I know kind of, ignorance is bliss, but it's not in that case, because the more Harry understands, the more he understands Voldemort and magic, and because magic has very, very subtle undertones. So the more he knows about the world and how people act magically, then I just think it's useful. And if he wasn't so stubborn and sort of determined in his own right, perhaps it would be perfect. But he does follow stuff too quickly before asking help. So that's the only reason I'd say why he shouldn't be, if that makes sense.
I think you're right, Jamie. And I mean, he was given this unique tool to see into the mind of Voldemort. He has to use it,
right?
Otherwise, he's got nothing over anyone else, really.
And he's just dead curious too. I mean, I would be wanting to know what he's up to, especially if I have to kill him.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess on the flip side, though, if Harry is smart to be doing this and to taking on to these clues, how stupid is Voldemort? I mean, to not on his end be closing this out, or even taking the steps to close it out, because
like he used to,
exactly.
He used it at one point, it was said, to his
own advantage. At one point, why wouldn't he think that at some point in the future Harry would do the same thing? And
he would, because it was said that he was practicing legitimacy against Harry, or so the Order thought. That was said in what earlier in book six or something.
Yeah,
right.
Wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is really where the pieces of the puzzle, I guess, start to come together for Harry. And, he's relaying this information onto people that are helping him out. And I just thought, I know Voldemort is a flawed character, but I just didn't think he would be this dumb.
Same. I said I would prefer a more sort of cunning, a more intelligent one who made less mistakes. This is the beginning of the end for Voldemort.
This is where he makes
one of just many stupid, plain stupid mistakes.
But it's
due to carelessness.
But people, wait, which mistake are you talking about specifically?
In this case,
the mind
he just stopped.
But it's people aren't. You know, if you write perfect characters, your books get rejected. Everyone's flawed. That's sort of the subtlety of writing, being able to write flawed characters. And Voldemort, in that regard, because he considers everyone beneath his power, he doesn't think that other people's minds can sort of influence him or take anything from his, you know, rock-solid mind. So it's like, he wouldn't care about that. Just as when Creature went to the island and drank the potion, he wouldn't have bothered to think about whether... he could get back. It's just his mindset now. And as Joe says, he's warped from all the killing and stuff and can't get it back. So
right,
his mind can't recover.
I would agree with you, except I think with Harry, Harry's obviously the only threat to him. I think he would treat the connection just as seriously as he always had. Because he had treated the connection between their minds very importantly. First, when he was using Harry, and second, when he was using occlumency against him, or legitimacy. But I just think Voldemort, and I would use that excuse. I mean, you're right, perfect characters do get rejected. And I would use that excuse for sort of many of the mistakes that Voldemort makes. But as I plan to illustrate later, there's just so many mistakes that Voldemort makes that I stop being able to accept that excuse. Jamie, after a while, I stopped being able to accept that Voldemort is a flawed character because I just think that she has portrayed him a little bit smarter than that in Book 6 when he's manipulating people and stuff. And by the end of Book 7, he just makes so many mistakes.
So does Harry, though. Harry makes a ridiculous amount of mistakes.
Yeah.
As well, so does everyone.
But they all work for him.
But no, but they don't, though, because he suffered a lot. Like, it was a worthwhile victory because he saved the future, but it was also, you know, kind of Pyrrhic. He didn't lose everything, but he lost a lot. You know, a great deal of people he knew, so he made mistakes. Now, it wasn't his fault that these people died, but he didn't do everything perfectly, and a lot of time Hermione was right, or Ron was right. They also made mistakes. They let stuff get in the way. They didn't think logically. They sort of, you know, acted childishly. Everyone made mistakes. Snape did. Dumbledore especially. Think of what he did. But he's still such an amazingly written character, and I would argue, even though his mistakes were probably greater and in a bigger number, he was a more perfect character because of, you know, what he stood for and perhaps that kind of thing.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's move along here.
But just some events that happened in the chapter is Harry's talk with Ginny. Ginny wishes Harry a very private happy birthday, which is interrupted by Ron, who tells Harry later to stop groping his sister. And just that Ginny thing, I'm sorry, but I had to mention it because that Ginny thing is very well written. I absolutely, I mean, a lot of these chapters feel like, I call them Book 5 chapters because of how much stuff is in them, just these two chapters are. And I think they're amazing to read as the last chapters of this year that we read on the podcast, because it's just it's a build up and it's a letdown, and as we get to the wedding, it's sort of the last the last chapter where everything's sort of normal with the living structure before they go off.
But
the Ginny thing. Now, guys, I'll talk about this for a second, because just what you thought about Harry and Ginny and how that played out in the series.
Well,
because this is pretty much the last time we see Harry and Ginny before the epilogue, as far as I can remember. And there's some scenes later where they meet again, but
well, it's very interpretable in very, very different ways. That scene when they're kissing and then Ron and Hermione walk in, because you could even, it's very mature. Because, you know, they're sort of, it's very sort of grown up for how old they are in some ways, but then also it's not very grown up at all. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you can interpret it in different ways. It's going to be very interesting to see how the filmmakers put their spin on it, whether it's two sort of, you know, children getting personal and business confused, or if it's two adults who are, you know, having something then, which they're not going to have. God, that was too deep. I feel sick.
No, it was. I mean, do you think they'll do a lot of character development on Bonnie Wright and Dan Radcliffe then?
Probably. I think they probably will, yeah. They need, I mean, like, that's a big scene, a very big scene.
Because they spent the time on Cho, so I think they should.
I think that'd be a fairly good scene to watch, too, in the movie.
Definitely.
Reading these books now, after reading it a couple times, I start thinking about how it's going to look in the movies, and I really see how I really see her Emma Watson and Rupert Grint really focusing on each other a lot.
Definitely,
this scene.
They're so sort of aware of it in the background. There's also two very separate mentions of the stolen hours on Hogwarts grounds a million years ago that took place between Harry and Ginny, and that's like sort of insight into Book Six we didn't have before. And I just think it's so wonderful because it's Harry's relationship, and it kind of ends a bit sadly when he goes off, and that's just one of the great elements of this book before he goes off and has his long journey. That the Ginny thing was very well handled and important.
I agree.
That's good. Yeah.
So so they're at Harry's birthday. He gets a bunch of presents. We can skip over because the presents are cool. But they get a message. It's a Patronus. It's a weasel, and Arthur Weasley's voice saying.
No, what? Chucklebolt, isn't it? Oh, sorry, wrong bit.
I was going to say.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Eric.
Oh, yeah, Arthur Weasley's voice saying,
sorry.
Minister of Magic coming with me. Right, and so Lupin and Tonks say, we gotta go. Peace out, homie. And they leave, and then moments later they see Scrimgeour and his mane of tangled hair coming to dinner.
Yeah.
Or not to dinner, but he has to speak to Ron and Hermione and Harry privately. They're wondering why they want Ron and Hermione too. Get there, he wants to separate them, but they say, screw you, we're seeing it together. Take it from there.
Right. Well, I mean, what we wanted to talk about was what Dumbledore gives to Ron, Hermione, and Harry. Of course, all those items turn out to be handy in the end. But at that time, one of Dumbledore's greatest moments here, where he gives us and the trio these three clues, but nobody has any idea what on earth to do with them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And neither do the characters, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, I just like, I really like the fact that that Ron really has no idea what's going on, and he pretty much almost screws it up for the three of them, and Hermione just gives him that look like, okay, you need to stop talking right now, or you're going to get us screwed.
Yeah.
Hermione's really smart in this chat, because she annoyed Scrimgeour with all that legal information on how he wasn't supposed to look through the will or the stuff that they were left, but they did, obviously, and the only reason they're getting him now on Harry's birthday is because the 31 days is up since Dumbledore's death and their initial confiscation.
And Scrimgeour seemed very reluctant to hand these items over, too, if you do read it.
Oh, he hated it. Giving him back.
He was so suspicious. You could really feel his emotion in this chapter.
Well, he blew up. He had his wand against Harry's chest when everyone ran in.
He burned a cigarette mark in his shirt.
Yeah, cigarette burn in his shirt. I mean, who's going to replace that shirt, honestly? I mean...
So, I mean, is there anything else to discuss with this, or should we just move on? I mean,
Flesh memories. I think it's brilliant how flesh memories and snitches are I just thought that was something brilliant because it has a particularly practical use in the field of sports, in addition to being very a significant plot point in this book.
Mm-hmm.
The flesh memory, because it says they have them. Snitches have flesh memories to determine, in case of a dispute, who actually touched the snitch first, because the first human hands to close around the snitch. Are the one that it responds to or reacts to in the future. I just thought that was so amazing.
Yeah.
And especially the revelation that at the end of the chapter that it was actually in Harry's mouth that caught the snitch the first time, which was brilliant. And it's just like similarly with Grigorovich that was actually mentioned previously, and we'll find that out. But it's just some brilliant stuff done in earlier books.
That's what I was going to say.
To fruition and really is wonderful.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of the message of the snitch?
Well, you brought up J.K. Rowling all the way back to book one was formulating this, and you know, you just think of all the detail that she put in. It's amazing that something as simple as the snitch Harry caught in the first Quidditch match comes back to have such huge significance in the seventh book. The only other thing that I wanted to bring up here real quick was, you know, the ministry in particular trying to meddle in, you know, Harry's affairs. You know, what good would it have done Scrimgeour to know anything about what Harry was doing? I mean, would it really have helped him at all?
He's desperate.
He's very desperate.
He doesn't know. He doesn't even think clearly. I don't think he's just so hungry for some kind of silver lining in this pretty much fruitless fight against Voldemort.
Yeah.
And Matt, you can tell he's desperate too, because actually, I mean, I think he's seeking Harry's help, because
yeah.
I mean, I think he's so obsessed with these items that Dumbledore gave him, and Hermione tells him such too. Hermione tells him, "This is what you've been doing, locked up while people in your own office, while people are dying all around you. You've been looking at these items that Dumbledore's trying to give us." So, and that whole time, obviously, he doesn't realize how infiltrated the Ministry has become until what appears to be the end of the next chapter, when he realizes how infiltrated everything is, and obviously his heroic acts are two chapters to come, but. You know, he's so obsessed with Harry and finding it all out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's keep moving on now. Micah, do you want to take the next point?
Aren't we... Isn't that it for this chapter?
It's just Ron gets a Delimitator, which I thought was cool that it was created by Dumbledore. Hermione gets Tales of Beedle the Bard, which are pretty much like Mother Goose rhymes, I think, the sort of things that we grew up with. Yeah. You know, hey, diddle diddle type thing.
She better keep that book. It's worth $4 million.
Yeah.
And Harry's snitch says, "I open at the close," which to me was like, WTF, and it's like, I reveal my secrets at the end of the book. Is that what it says?
Yeah.
I open at the close. At the close of what? The book? I mean, I know it's
Well,
answered,
that's the whole mystery. I mean,
I open at the close. That's completely pointless. Like, I won't tell you until you need me.
Yeah, well,
like,
well,
you know.
Right.
Okay, thanks, Dumbledore.
And don't forget the sword.
That is something Dumbledore would say.
Another thing Scrimgeour was getting very aggravated about.
Scrimgeour was very much like Fudge or Umbridge in this book to me. He had a different... Just the way he acted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot more... I don't know the right word, but he seemed not the same person that he was in Half-Blood Prince.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
So, next point. We don't really need to talk about what they get, because we all know, you know, what happens with them. Do you want to move on to the next point, Micah?
What is the next point?
I don't have any other points.
The Ministry is still meddling. Why is Scrimgeour still want to try? I guess we sort of did talk about that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing we don't mention is that Norbert's a girl. But that's not important.
Yeah. That was a big revelation, though. Norbert's a girl! We were like, what?
That's great. Okay, let's go on.
So that goes back to, guys, that goes back to episode 2 of MuggleCast, where we found out that Kevin was Kavina. Yeah. Now we find out that Norbert is Norberta.
I think we coined that on the Summer Road Tour. I think someone came... Do you remember that, Jamie? Did someone come up with a new name for Norberta?
Probably, yeah.
Was it that? Yeah, it was probably
It could have been something like that.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
So,
well,
that's chapter 7.
Yeah, we don't have any favorite lines from that because we're trying to move quickly through here. How about let's move on to chapter 8, Michael?
Chapter 8.
You handle
the
this.
The wedding.
I'm on the break. Wedding. We handled the other one earlier today. I'm done.
Oh, okay. I think the chapter kind of is self-explanatory. I'm not going to really summarize it here, but I thought.
Well, wait. Chapter 8?
Yeah.
It's not
chapter
about
eight,
a wedding,
wedding,
is it?
Chapter 8,
do you
the
want,
wedding.
Okay, I'll start over.
No, it's fine. I was just messing. You did fine. Good work.
You sure?
Yeah.
I can if you want.
No, dude, it's fine.
Look, I can do it.
Just
I mean,
forget
I really
what they said, Micah. Just keep going. You guys are screwing them up.
Sorry.
Well, I just kind of broke Chapter 8 down more by characters, I guess, instead of different
events. That was a good idea, I think.
And
that's a good idea.
We do meet a lot of new characters and see a lot of old people as well in this chapter. And the first one that really struck me was Xenophilius Lovegood. Obviously, he shows up at the wedding and makes an entrance with his, was it yellow robes or something along those lines?
Yeah.
He looks like an omelet is one of my favorite quotes, but yeah.
Right.
He's wearing yellow, and he thinks that it's important because yellow is the color of a sun, and it means good luck at weddings.
Yeah, well,
according to their superstition.
Yeah. And, you know, this is through Xenophilius we really start to learn. And let's fast forward a little bit to, you know, when Harry, disguised as Barney Weasley, is sitting down at the table and is visited by Victor Crumb. And it's really through Xenophilius Lovegood that we find out get our first glimpse at the Deathly Hallows. And we don't know that yet, but he's wearing this symbol around his neck, which seems to really anger Victor Crumb a lot. And
so much so that they're seen storming off, basically, after an argument later on at the end of the chapter.
Right.
Apparently, Victor Crumb, who was very nervous about Zathman, or that man, you know, he asks Barry, or Harry, Harry/Barney/Barry is what Muriel calls him, about this pendant. Now, what's the deal with the pendant? It's the symbol of Grindelwald, but why? Because Grindelwald came and graffitied the Durmstrang, this corridor in Durmstrang. He graffitied on this symbol, and then all the people who thought it was cool copied it down, and then obviously Grindelwald killed a bunch of people, you know, using that symbol as his thing, and Crumb's grandfather was killed, and Crumb says that it was everybody was taught a lesson then. You know, everyone who still supported the symbol was taught not to.
Right. And to me, when I was reading through this book, and obviously when you get to later chapters, there are other references as well, but when you talk about using your mark, you know, after you kill somebody or doing the things that Grindelwald did, it kind of reminded me a little bit of a swastika. And
Yes, definitely. You're supposed to,
And, another World War II reference, so to speak, that J.K. Rowling put in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, she said something about that, too, in the previous interviews. She said that there was something that went on about the coexistence of two of the wars during World War II, and she said there is a relevance between World War II, but we didn't really see that much of it until the book 7 came out.
Right, and I think it had less to do with, you know, with Voldemort, and probably more to do with Grindelwald, just because of, you know, Durmstrang's supposed location, and just the name Grindelwald, I guess, has more of a, like,
well,
a German feel
just like
to
the
it.
Swastika. Just like the swastika is a sort of slanted. There's a symbol, if you turn the swastika so that it's not slanted, it's actually a symbol of peace. And the Nazis took that symbol, tilted it, and took it to mean, you know, purity, or took it to be their symbol, or whatever it means. But it's so tilted peace symbol. Now, Grindelwald, the symbol he picked for himself, was actually just the symbol regarded out of the fairy tale of the Deathly Hallows. It was, you know, as it happens, it was pretty much the symbol that means the Hallows, and it later became Grindelwald's symbol, which is obviously something quite different than the Hallows, but the Hallows were what Grindelwald was all about, seeking...
But,
Sorry,
just to add to the last thing about Grindelwald being sort of, you know, the Nazi references, the Grindelwald is a municipality in the district of Interlaken in the canton of Bern in Switzerland. So it comes from the same type of language, I guess. It sounds, you know, Scandinavian sort of language thing, I guess. I don't really know much about language, but...
It's interesting.
It's a nice name, Grindelwald, I guess.
Yeah.
So Grigorovich made Crumb's wand. Is that what also we discussed?
Yeah, she did. Sorry, he did, yes.
Yeah. So Grigorovich, Harry discovers that Grigorovich, he knows where he heard the name before. It did have something to do with Quidditch, because the Quidditch player Crumb, who tries to pick up Ginny, Harry tells him that she's taken, says that his wand was one of the last ones made by Grigorovich, who Voldemort is now looking for. Yes, indeed. And Grigorovich is apparently a very good wand maker, and though Crumb concedes that he knows the Bretons are place a store in Ollivander.
They did.
Right. Okay, well, let's keep moving along here.
Phrase.
Mikey, do you want to move on to Aunt Muriel now? I think we can.
Would I ever?
Oh, yeah. 101 years old, baby.
And still going strong.
108, isn't she? No, she's 106.
Oh, well, what's 5 years between a 100-year-old woman, anyway?
Well, exactly.
You know, I don't know.
What's 10, then?
Yeah.
I understand.
All right, so Aunt Muriel is not so positive about Dumbledore. She confirms more of what Rita had to say about Dumbledore. And this is a
very contrasting opinion from Alphelius Dodge. And,
Alphelius.
Alphelius. Alphelius.
Andrew, Ford Angela called, and she really wants
okay,
to
Okay, yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah. And I get it, guys. We're all funny. Can we stop wasting more time? Go ahead. It's your show now. Go ahead. I'm just going to kick back and listen.
What I liked most about Aunt Muriel taking the side of what Rita Skeeter wrote was it was pretty much the closest thing we were ever going to get to a debate between Alphelius Dodge and Rita Skeeter.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't mess up in real life. Sorry.
I think it also made it more real for Harry. Like, the whole realization that maybe Dumbledore wasn't, you know, that perfect guy Harry always saw him to be.
Which is an important
thing. Right. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, I can understand why he wouldn't trust Rita, but then he's hearing it from someone else. Granted, it's a new character, and Harry hadn't met Muriel before.
Not only that, I mean, Doge is getting extremely flustered during this whole thing, and if I was Harry sitting in that position, I mean, I would think that some of it's got to be true. I mean, if he's just sitting there not being responded at all to what Aunt Muriel is saying, there has to be some truth to that. And maybe he clearly didn't want Harry to know, but... that was just kind of interesting. And also that what I put down here was that I thought that Doge was kind of a character that Joe threw in there to keep reminding us of who he thought Dumbledore was through the first six books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, just hearing two very opposite sides made Harry realize he really doesn't really know anything about Dumbledore, pretty much. He'd never heard of any of these accusations before, and it just seems like he pretty much wasted time getting to know Dumbledore or something? Or maybe I'm just going...
But it's like, you can never really learn everything about someone. And, you know, there's stuff that people don't tell people, just in general. It's kind of... I mean, like, I think Harry still knew Dumbledore very, very well, because he didn't tell that stuff to anyone. And I'm sure if he told it to someone, Harry would be the first one, you know? It's like... Yeah. I just think you can't really undercut their very, very, very intense relationship just from finding out a few facts about his childhood, which, although significant, shouldn't cast any doubt on the character he'd come to know, I guess.
Mm. Right. Well, it seemed that there were things about Dumbledore, though, that it was public information, but that Harry had never really found out.
Such as the Dumbledore's living in Godric's Hollow, and the possibility, as it says later, that Dumbledore could go and visit his parents' graves and then have to walk past James and Lily's, you know, sort of thing. All of that seems...
Yeah.
Especially due to the fact that Godric's Hollow and Harry's knowledge of it seems to be tainted, how he knew about it before he should have, or before it was mentioned in the books. He knew where it was or said about it. But... I forget what I'm saying, except that it's that Dumbledore had some closeness, and I think when we see Dodge, it's basically like we see this guy who's, and we've previously read the obituary where Dodge introduces himself as a kid who had who was excluded and because of his dragon box or whatever. And you know, so you get this fierce loyalty to Dumbledore just because of how great, you know, his image is, and Dodge is very, you know, adamant about Dumbledore being seen as this great, very friendly person, as he was to Dodge, and that's really incredibly important. And the line is the line that you guys were referring to is he wanted the truth, and yet all Dodge did was sit there and bleat feebly that Ariana had been ill. Harry could hardly believe that Dumbledore would not have intervened if such cruelty was happening inside his own house, and yet there was undoubtedly something odd about the story.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's learning the truth, at least bits and pieces of it. Basically. It may not be exactly what Aunt Muriel is conveying, but I wanted to go back to what you said about Godric's Hollow, though, because I think that to me, here's this kid who's been suffering for his entire life, knows absolutely nothing, really, about his past, and Dumbledore lived in the same place that his parents did, and yet he never shared that piece of information with Harry at all, and he could have, realistically, at any time.
Yeah. I just think that was another big hit for Harry. That was just another way Joe was trying to make Harry realize that Dumbledore wasn't someone to... I mean, you should still look up to Dumbledore, but, you know, don't see him as a perfect character.
Right. Which is good. She made him human.
Yeah, exactly.
She gave him a family.
Which was fantastic.
Odd. Yeah.
Yep.
Just thoughts of it. Said earlier, the thoughts of a teenage Voldemort, you know. Or, sorry, the thoughts of a teenage Dumbledore, you know, it's just weird.
Yeah. Did you have another point to add to this, Micah?
No.
I mean, just about Godric's Hollow. The reason why Dumbledore may have not told him.
I don't know what the reason would be that he wouldn't tell him. I mean, I think it would have provided him a little bit of comfort, you know, to have some tie back to his past.
Would there have been too much of a connection? Maybe Dumbledore didn't want that kind of personal connection.
Well, that's the reason.
I mean, that's not the biggest personal connection, but it just can add fuel to the personal connection fire.
Didn't J.K.R. say that that's why he didn't tell Harry the truth about the Mirror of Erised at first, was because Dumbledore would have seen himself with his parents and his family, and that's exactly what Harry was seeing, and it was too close that Dumbledore thought it was inappropriate?
Yeah.
Well, I think that at that point it may have been a little bit too much for Harry to understand and to take in all at once. And but I think something as simple as saying that he had himself lived in Godric's Hollow would have...
I think it would have helped.
Yeah. I
but I don't think he also would have wanted Harry to delve too much into his family either, because it's probably not something that he wishes to talk about with anybody either. It's too painful.
On the contrary, he did. He always enjoyed finding out more about his parents. I think.
Not Harry. Harry finding out about Dumbledore's family.
Oh yeah. Dumbledore might. Yeah, I mean, pretty much book six, the last moments of the last year of Dumbledore's life was spent setting up appointments, not closely. I mean, surely they would have had something to talk about every single night of the year if they wanted to, but the appointments were based on the Horcruxes because that was Harry's journey, that was Harry's goal. And although Dumbledore's family was, possibly information that Harry would have benefited from knowing, it wasn't most important, and the consequences that Harry has to feel betrayed or possibly he has to doubt Dumbledore, and that's what the story's about, doubting Dumbledore.
Yeah, let's move on though. We're really getting long here.
Well, we've gotten pretty much everything except the very end. There everybody's dancing. Ron and Hermione are dancing.
And there was a wedding, by the way. I mean, I know.
Yeah, there was
we
a wedding.
Didn't really touch on that, but
it wasn't that big of a deal. I mean,
no,
everyone was really excited before we all got book seven. Wasn't everyone like, oh, we get to see the wedding? Was it Jamie? Did you get really excited about that? Someone did.
I did get excited about that. I thought it was cool to have a wedding to see what a wizard's wedding like.
Right.
Like,
yeah, you're right.
The vows, they say.
They have phoenixes and the cake when they cut the cake.
Yeah. So at the very end of the chapter, they get a Patronus from
Kingsley.
And it says, the ministry has fallen, Scrimgeour is dead, they are coming.
Then it says, April Fools.
April Fools.
And the second one that turns
up. With all seriousness, with that scene, I think that's going to be so awesome in the film.
Oh my god, yeah. Like all the music.
Because you can just hear like this classical music in the background, everyone's dancing. Right. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this Patronus just comes out of... and lands in front of everybody, and they all just stop and just look at it, and then with this booming, dark voice, the ministry has fallen, Shacklebolt is dead, they are coming.
Scrimgeour is dead, Shacklebolt is very much alive.
I think the Patronus is going to be tweaked just a little bit to say, the ministry has fallen, Scrimgeour is dead, they are coming, Dumbledore's got style. And then it's going to cut the black.
No. But
he's got to say that line again.
When I read that, when he said, they are coming, did anybody go back to Lord of the Rings when he said, they are coming, when he read
I've
the
never
manuscript?
Read Lord of the Rings.
Wait, yes.
But you didn't see the movie?
Matt, which part was that from exactly? They are coming.
Fellowship of the Ring, when they were in the the dwarf's mine.
Yes.
When he was reading it.
And that's the best example. There's a piece in the Lord of the Rings soundtrack that's sort of a bit from every single film at some point, and that's the best bit. Across the Bridge of Khazad Dûm is when it goes for the first time. It could be the first time, I think.
Yeah, no, that was the climactic of the theme,
wasn't it? Isn't that?
Yeah, that was it.
Well, what a beautiful soundtrack! Howard Shore, you did the film proud. A lot of proudness.
But one other thing I wanted to add was just that. I thought that when the Patronus comes and says what he says, it was really one of the holy moments of the series.
Yeah.
Because you realize, you know, the game is on, you know.
Yeah.
It's about to go down. The wedding's really the last happy scene in the book.
It was literally the last good moment of the story.
Yeah, everything else from that on in is Harry running from Voldemort. Well, yeah.
Because right after you read it, I mean, all your adrenaline just starts flowing through your body. You're like, oh my god, I gotta turn the page.
Right. Like, anti-lace.
We need a song for Scrimgeour. I haven't come up with one yet, so.
Oh.
I did.
Does he deserve a song? Okay, what's his song?
The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
Why did you... Oh, yeah, that's... Jamie, you rock. That's better.
What?
The Lion Sleeps Tonight? That's what it's called?
You know, in the village, the peaceful village.
Oh, it's not called The Lion Sleeps Tonight, though, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, well, no. It was called...
It might be, like, In the Jungle.
I think it's called In the Jungle, yeah. Mm.
Oh, right, sorry.
I still think after every death, they should have another one Bites the Dust by Queen.
Yeah.
Just a quick, another one Bites the Dust, snap.
Why do we have a sign?
What was Eric's? Come on, please. We got to move through this.
Why are we doing this? Why do we have a song for Scrimgeour?
Oh, because now we're doing this thing on chapter by chapter where every time a character dies, we play a song for him. At least a song sample.
Oh, I missed that. Okay, well, forget mine then.
Sorry.
Don't worry about it.
So in honor of Scrimgeour, today we are going to play In the Jungle.
Great song. It's by The Tokens. Purchase it on iTunes for 99 cents.
Here's to you, Scrimgeour. You were worthless. Okay, so now it's time for
quote quiz.
That's pretty good, Andrew.
Thank you. It's supposed to be like an echo, you know, like I'm in a tunnel.
Oh, really?
It's like, quiz.
Andrew, just turn your mixer on and
you'll
do
it. No,
dude,
it's never going to work. It's never going to work.
No, I mean for the echo.
It's... Okay. It's time for quote quiz chapter 9. This comes from... of course I lost it. It's wonderful. Good planning on my behalf. I'll just take this one. If I can't use magic, and you can't use magic near me without us giving away our position... And then he was cut off. Or she. There's quote quiz for you this week. Jamie, you want to do a British joke?
I don't have one for this one. Sorry, guys. But it's...
Okay. Oh, come on, what the hell, Jamie? It's like not 9 months in the making?
No, but it's fine. I made quite a successful one, I think, previous show. Yeah. So, but also, it's New Year, and New Year isn't the time for jokes. It's for looking forward, and jokes describe... the past, so you know.
Yeah. Does anyone have any New Year's resolutions for the for 2008 before we wrap things up today? Last year we all did.
I don't want to be as hot as I am now, because it's
wow,
just not fair to everybody.
So
you know,
cocky. Okay. You're muted for the rest of the show.
Oh wow, punishment.
No, my New Year's resolution is to move out to California successfully. Oh yeah, Jamie's coming out too. I haven't really mentioned that yet.
Maybe.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, man.
News to Matt.
Haven't I mentioned it yet? Haven't I mentioned it? Oh. No. Maybe. It's very, very, you know, perhaps at the moment.
Anything from anyone else?
My New Year's resolution, I think, is to, because obviously we've got some things going in 2008. We've got still a bunch of Harry Potter events, the end of weekly MuggleCast. So I think I just, my New Year's resolution is to, see everything through, to the end and just make it another good year, I think, and just be true to myself and, and have another good year.
Matt, Micah?
Hey, Micah.
Yeah.
Were you really keen to shake that case of gonorrhea?
Dude, come on. You're not supposed to bring that up.
Do you guys have anything? We're running really long.
Yeah.
This is making me sad.
What'd you say?
This is making me sad.
No, no.
Editing.
Jamie.
All right. If you don't have anything, it's not a big deal.
Well, no. I mean, I just go off of what Eric said, and I think with MuggleCast, you know, most likely coming to an end on a weekly basis, I agree with just seeing things through and making these last shows something that people will, you know, really enjoy. And
right.
Yeah. Mine's kind of the same.
Yeah.
By the way, there are now 5 to 10. Groups on Facebook about our ending the show, so people are torn up.
Well, that's well said, Mike and Matt. I wonder if we came through with our New Year's resolutions from last year, because I know last year we looked at the ones from the year prior, so too bad we didn't look into that beforehand.
So this is our third New Year's.
This is our third
New Year's show.
Yep.
And we should count down, shouldn't we, for the New Year?
How about we do it after the contact information?
Okay.
All right. Well, before we wrap up the show today, it's time to remind everyone about our contact information. If you would like to send something to our P.O. Box, you can do that by mailing it to MuggleCast P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia 30028. You can visit MuggleCast.com for a handy feedback form to contact any one of us at our first name at staff.mugglenet.com, with the exception of Matt, who is MatthewB@staff.mugglenet.com. You can also visit the MuggleCast website for a handy feedback form. And don't forget our community outlets, MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Frapper, Last.fm, the fan listing. You can also dig the show whenever you want at dig.com. Vote for us once a month at Podcast Alley and rate and review us at Yahoo Podcast. The fan forums are also up again. MuggleCastFan.net/forums have returned. They started from scratch, so visit MuggleCast.com for a link in case you forget. It's right there on the top.
Alice
post
has done an amazing job getting those back up.
I think that does it for this week's show. We're going to wrap things up today with a New Year's countdown, just in case you happen to time it, right?
Yeah. Well, no, we don't need to worry about timing the show up to it. I'm just saying, because we're releasing on the 30th as a whole day in advance.
Well, it might be on the 31st. I don't
know
for sure.
I'm just saying, if it's almost midnight, you know, or if you have nobody, if it's almost midnight and you have nobody, we'll do a countdown. You can count down with the MuggleCast.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
It's like a commentary.
So pause the show and wait until about, you know, 15, 20 seconds before the end.
Yeah, okay.
Unpause it, and we'll be counting down with you.
Okay.
So, you guys ready?
Got it, yeah.
Put on the Bruce Springsteen, as we do every year.
Yeah,
this year we're putting on Europe.
No.
What?
What is that, your new resolution, Michael? War.
No. Play a Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen. Right, Micah.
Oh, sorry. Right. I thought you meant war.
It's a Springsteen version of Auld Lang Syne.
Yeah. All right. Ready? On three, we'll start from 10. 1, 2. When I say three.
When he says three, we count
down
from 10.
From 10.
Thank you, Matt. I understand you.
All right. 1, 2, 3.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
That was easy.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Jamie Lawrence.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
And I'm Matt Britton.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will see you in 2008 for MuggleCast 127. Bye-bye.
Have a great
Happy
year.
New
Yay.
Year.
Night. like, you know what I'm saying? Because, like, holidays at Hogwarts, they can always have, like, the pumpkins flying and the... Or do you think they'll try and attempt hovering candles and stuff like that? Like, for the Great Hall? Because that would be awesome.
That would be cool. I don't know, though. It better be good, though. That's all I know. I mean, whose phone keeps going off?
It's mine. Sorry.
Oh. Turn it off or, like, chuck it across the room or something.
Oh, cool. Thanks, Andrew. I'll do that.
Okay, this has nothing to do with Chapter 7.